Happy Monday, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome to our four-hour solar sports soiree live from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City. Heard on affiliates nationwide and north of the border. The free Odyssey app, the CBS Sports app, Sirius XM, channel 158. From Anchorage to Atlanta, from Ocean City, New Jersey to Ocean City, Maryland, Kalamazoo and Waterloo, we are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
We think we're on the air. We've had some technical difficulties overnight here on CBS Sports Radio. Amy Lawrence and James Boccioni just left this room after 4 hours of battles with technical difficulties and satellite issues and dead air and whatnot. It looked like they had just been through a war. I told Botch, go have a beer. He said, I definitely will. We think you can hear us now. If you can't, this doesn't matter. But if you can, and throughout the morning, if there are issues, feel free to let us know what's going on, because when things happen overnight, early in the morning, there's not always the easiest, quickest fix, because there's not always the folks around who know how to handle those things. So we are kind of on the fly here, figuring things out, hoping that you are hearing this four-hour bit of sports nonsense. It is me, Andrew Bogish, in once again for Damon Amendola. If you're keeping track of these things, thank you, because we know that Pete Bilotti is not. I don't know what this is for DA, if this is a vacation, if this is paternity. Maybe he and Carlos got called up to active duty after last week together. I'm not really sure what's going on, but DA is out all of this week, so you've got me once again. We've got no Bilotti through Thursday, so Ryan Botcher stepped in on the wheels of steel. Kevin Wall's in charge of all five of the shows this week. And to my left, in his lone appearance this week in the update chair, is the one and only Pat Boyle. Boyle, I think you were here a lot last week. What the heck did I miss? I saw army rations. I saw some anger. I saw some excitement. I saw a cool soccer jersey. What happened here last week?
I was only here once.
Oh, okay.
Week.
My bad. Never mind that.
I did updates on Thursday. I was one of the many rotating update anchors last week, because I think you had Emmanuel Barbari, you had a Chris Lopresti, right. You had a Peter Schwartz on Friday.
I don't think I've done my regular job in August. And it's August 21st today.
Yeah.
Between me being away and other people being away, I haven't done my regular shift and I don't even remember anymore.
This is like, imagine going to see a play on Broadway.
Yeah. Well, the Friday
like,
show.
So I don't know. I don't even know who a famous Broadway actor is, but I'm so excited. And you see anything but that. You see just, there's a rotating cast of characters. That being said, Bogues, I will lift us up and say that I think We do a pretty damn good job. Botcher, Kevin Wall, myself, yourself. This is the best you can get if you're not getting DA.
The Friday show, and I say this as nicely as possible, the Friday show here, which was Caserta and a Carlos and Schwartz,
Peter Schwartz
and me.
It was Botcher.
Show. It was a show.
That is the old fourth NFL preseason game on steroids. But everybody loved it. And Caserta sat here looking amazing with that. Hey, I mean, it's just, this is a wonderful group of people, of idiots, that all come together in different forms or fashion. August is normally like this around here. This has gone to a new level since we threw some babies into the mix to add paternity leave. We know Pete has infinite days to burn, hence missing four of these shows this week. So it is nothing close to normal. I hope the show on Fridays stayed on the rails as much as possible. Usually we're so straight-laced and professional. I hope the kids didn't get too carried away on Friday with all the older adults not here. But maybe a little bit small dose of normalcy today and this week. And then next week, as far as I know, we've got four shows next week of basically the regular crew. Me, DA, Cap, and Pete are all supposed to be here next Monday through Thursday. Then we get our last summer Friday. And I just mentioned his name right there a second ago. That's really the headline right now. Kaplan is also off this week. So we're going old school. This is just a radio show. I know it's shocking. I know it's weird, but you can't look at us. Boyle is lost without the lights, no makeup. There's no viewers. I'm thankful. I don't even remember to restart the TV monitor behind me for our logo.
That's true. Also, I don't wear makeup.
That's true.
Not yet.
There's no props to worry about to move it out of the studio. We're just doing radio for 4 hours. If you need to see us, you know what we look like. So just use your mind. Picture me talking. Picture Boyle yelling about something. Botcher, for those of you keeping track, is wearing a Bird Bath Celebrations t-shirt.
Yeah, it's the
Orioles.
It's the guide to the Bird Bath. So it's like a single is the water, the faucet.
Okay.
Double is an extra base hit, the sprinkler, and the home run is the tube.
All right.
The hose.
Okay, and while not in a Bon Jovi t-shirt.
Just a basic $7 shirt from Marshalls.
Okay.
That's what you get every day.
All right.
Wow.
All right, and assuming, again, you can hear all of us, away we go on a Monday with a lot to get to, as always. Another batch of NFL preseason games to weed through. CBSSports.com's Jared Dubin is on the show this morning. The Little League Classic was great. The whole day yesterday in Pennsylvania was awesome. Also in Pennsylvania, James Harden, the Sixers still suck. We'll get to that again. Sounds of Saturday, our college football preview continues with Bob Kessling, the voice, the longtime voice of the Tennessee Volunteers. But we begin with the other football. This is a remarkable story, and it's gone for 29 days, basically, better than anyone could have expected. Leo Messi has come to America, come to Inter Miami. He has taken the MLS and soccer as a whole in this country by storm, and it's just the beginning. And this morning, it's where we begin. It's our cold open.
Uh-oh, Lionel Messi around Zimmerman. Messi!
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
I don't know that dude's name. I should by now because he's crushing all of these Messi calls. His extended Messi yell when Messi scores, I keep hearing it in my backyard. My son and his friends play soccer because they all want to be Messi. And Messi keeps scoring to let the calls happen. The call that you just heard through Apple TV was from Saturday night. It was the 10th goal in 7 Inter Miami games that Messi has scored. It feels like they get prettier and more dramatic every time he scores. This one was relatively early in the League's Cup finale. It was 3 or 4 touches, control, one move, another move, and then a bending left foot top corner goal. It started the scoring. The game went to penalty kicks. Messi converted his PK. Inter Miami won over Nashville in PKs to win the League's Cup. They had never won a trophy before in their young history. He shows up a month later. They're on a 7-match win streak. They've got a trophy, and they start to play for another one this week. Their next game is Wednesday at FC Cincinnati. That's the U.S. Open Cup semifinals. That event is for every professional team in America, and you just weed your way through the end. They find themselves in the Final Four, and another chance for Messi magic and a Messi trophy. This has been insane. We had about 3 weeks ago, we had Paul Tenorio on from The Athletic about week one, the first 10 days or so of Messi in Miami. And, you know, he scored twice in that right away. I mean, it's been unbelievable nonstop, and it's not slowed down. It's been all good. They keep winning. He's been spectacular. And the impact has been off the charts. Now, the one thing we don't still know is any specific ratings from Apple, because they're not sharing them. MLS is not putting them out there. I don't know if you're going to read anything into that. Part of me says if they had these astronomical numbers and increases in purchases and whatnot, they'd be telling us about them. On the other hand, maybe it's still hard to track exactly what everybody's doing streaming-wise. But as far as the soccer goes, the games have been great. The drama has been great. Messi's been Messi plus. Every story about him being a teammate has been great. Thanking team employees, buying players gifts, taking care of his teammates, being one of the guys. Everything is working here through the first 29 days of Messi in MLS. And the thing that struck me the most, and after Saturday, why I wanted to talk about on the show this morning, and then Saturday made it, just kept pushing it further and further up the to-do list, is I just spent a week on the Jersey Shore walking boardwalk through a town on the beach, and the jersey I saw the most, boys, girls, under 10 teenagers, messy jerseys. The boardwalk shops that are selling Pokemon crap and Barbie gear, right next to them, messy t-shirts. I saw kids in full messy unis. I didn't even know you could do this. They've got the Inter Miami jersey and the shorts going. It's a full ensemble. This was, I could not believe how many people were already sporting the messy Inter Miami gear up and down this boardwalk, six nights of the last week. Everywhere you look, in particular, there's the purple version of the messy Inter Miami jersey, whether it's the actual jersey, the t-shirt jersey. It's just everywhere. And I don't know what the full end game is going to be, because while guys may be looking at Messi and seeing his success, at, and it, what's odd to me too is he has not technically played an MLS match yet. He's played MLS teams in different competitions, but they have not played a regularly scheduled MLS game. There was supposed to be one, I believe, last week, but they had to postpone it because Inter stayed in this League's Cup and kept going. So he has not yet played a real, true MLS game. So Inter Miami is still one of the worst teams record-wise in the league because they haven't had any benefit yet from Messi bumping up their record. But they went from being one of the worst teams in the league, adding him, Busquets, Jordi Alba, and now they basically can't be beaten. There's no way this is not a this slows down anytime soon, because he's not going to slow down anytime soon. There'll be a couple of teams who show up with better plans. He'll have off nights, but he didn't do much on Saturday for 25 or so minutes, and the ball found him, and he made two little moves, and the ball's in the back of the net. He's always going to be involved. It's always going to be cool to watch him. In terms of following him to MLS, the hard part is he's messy. And the deal that he has from MLS, from Inter Miami with Apple, is not a repeatable thing where he's getting a cut of all this new business. That's not a thing that they can do all the time for the next guy that wants to leave Europe and come to MLS and live in America and have a little bit of a drop in competition, gain some notoriety, but also to live in a place where maybe he's not the rock star that he is in Barcelona, in England, wherever. There are not other messy deals out there to give these guys, but I think what he's showing is how successful you can be in your own setup at the, you know, the back third of your career when you come here, still have fun, still be good, still compete, because he wants to do all of these things. I keep reading quotes, hearing quotes from people that know him, former teammates, friends who say he's been different since they won the World Cup in Argentina. And he wanted to do this, and it's put him in a place where he's just playing freely and fun, and that's why it's all going so well, and that's why he cares about being a good teammate and why he cares about winning. When they won on Saturday, before the trophy presentation, he went and found DeAndre Yedlin, who was Inter Miami's captain until Messi showed up, gave him the armband, and made Yedlin come with him onto the stage to accept the trophy and do that little trophy lifting that is soccer tradition. He wants this to work. He's making it work. And a month into it, it is working astonishingly well for him, for them, and for the entire league. Because everybody that I know that talks about soccer is talking now about Messi and watching Messi and paying to watch Messi on Apple. It's just remarkable. The one thing I can't understand, and I asked this when we had Paul Tenorio of The Athletic on a couple weeks ago, the one thing I don't get, because I don't still know soccer well enough, is that buried in all of this great hype and excitement, is there any bit of a knock on MLS that he and these two other guys have walked in and basically run over the rest of the league? Is it saying anything about the competition level and the quality of player, which has grown exponentially in MLS? It's getting better and better as a feeder league for European clubs, for national teams. It's gaining respect. But these three dudes have walked in and are basically putting on a show that has not been slowed down yet for seven matches by different teams, different approaches. They just can't be stopped. There has to be something slightly negative in there, buried somewhere down deep inside about just how good MLS is. There's also been stories about how Messi has been teaching them how to be professionals on like the European level in terms of practice habits and whatnot. But it is 99.9% amazing for MLS. And any expectations that you had for it have to be exceeded at this point. Boy, you love soccer. I think you got on the soccer train sooner than I did, earlier than I did.
Yeah, I mean, I played it in high school. So I've been a big soccer fan for a long time.
So I don't know like how much you bought into Messi, how much you felt the Messi importance and the effect of this last month, but you know, I had high expectations, and it's been even better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I don't want to throw cold water on it, so I'll start with the positives here. Like you said, for the exposure, for the growth of soccer here in the States and North America, for finally getting somebody that wasn't way out of their prime. Like, I remember when David Villa came to NYCFC,
right,
who was one of the best strikers in Spain's history, played for Barcelona, played for a bunch of great teams. That was, like, a huge thing. And then Andrea Pirlo, one of the best players from Italy, came here. Like, it's way bigger than that. Way bigger. I mean, it's Leo Messi. So it's great. Hopefully, you know, money continues to come in from the TV deal they have with Apple TV. Maybe we actually get an actual broadcasting deal.
Yeah, so I'll say this too. Up until Messi, everything I had heard from people inside the business was that the Apple TV thing was a disaster.
Yes.
From like that, I mean, even the Messi introductory event in Miami sucked on Apple TV. Now, maybe the weather was a problem that night, but you couldn't hear it. The quality was bad at first. Like, that was a you-know-what show for a while. The deal was they were way over budget, shaky announcer decisions, and it just disappeared. Like, you didn't know MLS existed because it was on Apple TV, and you had to pay $100 to go find it, but you know where Messi is now.
Yeah, for sure. So again, it is a big step forward, and I think soccer's only getting bigger and more popular in the States and in North America. That being said, now with Saudi money playing a big role,
right,
in all sports, you know, golf especially, but now soccer. You see some of the biggest stars in the world who are still in their prime leaving to go to Saudi Arabia, when maybe that would have been our chance to, you know, piggyback off of the Messi stuff here for MLS and for the United States and say, okay, maybe we can get Karim Benzema. Nope. Instead, now there's absolutely no shot that any MLS team can afford to throw $100 million at a player. So as much as a big step forward it is for Messi coming to the States and coming to Miami, I don't think it's now going to say, okay, now we're going to start getting other huge players that are maybe just outside of their prime to come here, unless this whole Saudi thing maybe starts to go away or decrease in the next 2 years, which I don't know if it is. And again, Messi's still great. He's still right up there as the greatest player of all time. You can put him in the argument with a Ronaldo, with Pele, anybody else that's ever played the game. Messi will forever be up there. But again, he played for PSG the last 3 years, Paris, in the French league. And I would say, you know, the Premier League in England is still the best league in the world. And then you've got the Bundesliga in Germany, Italy's league, Spain's league, all better than the French league. So he's playing in the fifth best league in Europe, playing with Kylian Mbappe, playing with Neymar, playing with some of the best players in the world. And they had, like, the PSG owners are... I don't want to make a mistake here. I know they're from the Middle East. They got a ton of money. So they were throwing a ton of money at that team, and they still couldn't win the Champions League in Europe. The first year he was there, they didn't even win their league.
Right.
And they're playing in the fifth best league in Europe, and now all of a sudden he comes to the MLS, and Miami can't lose. So the MLS competition is still a far cry from everywhere else in the world. And Europe, maybe that doesn't matter. I would say again, though, this has been a huge boost for the popularity of the sport in the United States and in North America, and it's Leo Messi. So I guess enjoy it while he is here, because he might only be here for 2-3 years at most.
Yeah, and my son wants to go to a match, and we were in southern New Jersey last week, so we were connected to Philly more than New York, and they were playing last Thursday night, I think, or last Wednesday night in Philadelphia, against the Philadelphia Union. And that thing, it was like this cheapest standing room only ticket was like $350 for one, just to get into that. And then when he plays at Red Bull Arena, it's $500 to get in.
So you know the pipe. You know the interest is there. It has sparked. It's quite a little bit of a phenomenon here. So, again, it's great. It's fantastic. And hopefully the Messi magic doesn't die. Hopefully he stays healthy.
Yeah.
Because that would be the one thing that, you know, if you get, I mean, let's say how many hundreds of thousands of people have now been like, all right, I'm going to tune in. I'm going to get the MLS season pass on Apple TV. If he gets injured, then that's going to be kaput. And again, this is just the League's Cup. Like you have,
right.
You have the league, you have the MLS regular standings, which it's different from most of other soccer around the world where there's no actual like knockout playoffs at the end. It's just whoever wins the most games in the league throughout the year, you're the champion. We actually do have the MLS knockout tournament playoffs, like every other sport we have here
right.
in North America. So there is that. And then you also have a separate League's Cup tournament, which is what they've been running through, and they just won. Inter Miami's still in last place in the MLS.
Yeah.
They're not making the playoffs this year. So I think for the fact that it's been, you know, that they just won the League's Cup and you've got all this interest is great. And hopefully next year they can actually make some noise.
And I think it is important to keep things in perspective that it's going to be hard for other people, other stars like him to come here and do anything similar to this. And you also don't want to get carried away. And part of this is, I think, people not fully understanding soccer still. But I saw a tweet yesterday from Mark Jones, the ESPN announcer, saying, you know, Inter Miami winning this is like the Rockets or the Pistons winning this new NBA, you know, the NBA thing.
NBA
so,
Cup.
Can't wait. Sit tight. And I wanted to be like, well, are the Rockets and Pistons going to add LeBron, Wade, and Bosh in the middle of the season to win that thing? Like, it's not, so we don't need to get crazy in pumping up the NBA's in-season thing because of what Inter Miami did when it's not, again, like the Rockets have this influx of talent in November to show up and win this Commissioner's Cup thing in December. But it's been fun to watch. It has been only a month, only 4 weeks and a day or so, and it's just one thing after another that's positive, positive, positive for MLS and Messi. And like Boyle said, it's not going to last for forever, two or three seasons. So hopefully we get two or three full seasons of Messi and it remains this fun to watch. We've got other soccer to do this morning. Spain won the Women's World Cup about 24 hours ago, a win that was not without drama pre-game, during the game, and then after the game as well. The soccer was beautiful. Spain's federation is not. That's on the agenda this morning. James Harden is as well. A lot of football talk. Jared Dubin, CBSSports.com, will join us, as will Bob Kessling, the longtime voice of the Tennessee Vols. He's our Sounds of Saturday guest on this Monday morning. When we come back, though, it's Soundcheck, your best audio of the day. Next, The DA Show, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Two young NFL quarterbacks and a tennis legend make up Soundcheck on this Monday morning. We begin with Packers QB Jordan Love, the number one guy now in Green Bay, and he says he is ready to go for week one.
At this point, I think I'm definitely ready for week one and carry on throughout the season. I think these first two games were a lot of good work, obviously getting the practice in with Cincy and with the Patriots as well. But I think, you know, playing in that last game would just be getting more reps, just getting more comfortable, seeing new looks, going against a different team. So I don't think it would hurt.
There is a game tonight, which I can't remember who's playing. One of them, I believe, is the Commanders. And that concludes the second round of preseason games. And then Thursday starts the third and final round. And that's the next kind of hurdle for all these coaches and players to decide who plays, who doesn't in the finale. Jordan Love says he's good to go now through two. He's 5 of 8, 84 yards, a touchdown in Saturday's game with New England, which ended early because of that Isaiah Bolden scary injury. We'll discuss that, some other issues around the NFL injury-wise, and decision-wise throughout the morning as well. Now we're in Carolina. Panthers rookie QB Bryce Young had another tough go-around, so he was asked if he's ready for week one.
I'm a trusted coaches. You know, whatever, you know, honestly, I don't really know how the whole, I don't know what the procedure is. And again, I know coaches are different. So, you know, I full, you know, wholeheartedly trust the coaches and whatever their decision is. We haven't talked about or discussed anything, but whatever Coach Reich wants me to do and thinks is going to be best for me and for the team, you know, that's what I'm going to do.
And that's about playing in their final preseason game as well. I think their first decision would be fixing their offensive line, which has given Bryce Young zero chance to make plays in two preseason games so far. Finally, the thing, the event that probably almost none of you paid attention to, but might have been the best thing that happened yesterday. It was the men's final, the Cincinnati Masters, Novak Djokovic, Carlos Alcaraz, a Wimbledon final rematch. It was over 3 hours long, three long sets, I think all tiebreakers. Alcaraz won the first, Djokovic rallied to win the second, and then the third. So he gets this win after Alcaraz got him at Wimbledon, and Novak talking here about the young Spanish rival.
Boy, you never give up, man. I mean, I love that about you, but, you know, sometimes I wish that you maybe play a few points just like this, you know. Spanish never die. Okay, good. I've heard that before, you know. or I've experienced this before. Maybe not like this, or maybe yes. I don't know.
So obviously a little Rafi on the doll hat tip in there as well. This thing went till 8:30 last night and had my almost complete attention. I was trying to watch the NFL game, was trying to watch the Nats and Phillies, but I kept being drawn to this because every single point of this match was ridiculous. It looked like Djokovic had nothing physically late in the first set, somehow won the second. The third set could have ended about 15 different times, but the other guy just kept making shots to catch up, to go ahead, to fall. I mean, it was incredible, incredible drama for a Sunday in mid-August in Cincinnati, which on the sly, by the way, if you're a tennis fan, is a super fun event. It's like a mini U.S. Open. Men and women are there. Pretty, you know, pretty significant grounds. It's not in Cincinnati. It's in Mason, Ohio. I've been there once. It's not. So you got to leave Cincy to get there. But if you love tennis and you can't get to New York to see the Open, that's not a bad trip if that's within, you know, especially within driving distance for you in the middle of the country. So if you live anywhere between like Philadelphia and Boise, based on our geography, then Mason, Ohio is within your striking distance for some tennis. But that match was insane, Boyle.
Yeah, that was one of the greatest best of three set matches, right? I've ever seen. All the Grand Slams are best of five, so every other tournament's best of three. And this is, you know, it's a Masters tournament, so it is the second tier. It's pretty big, right, going into the U.S. Open. And everybody, when this tournament started last week, everybody was like, all right, are we going to get Djokovic Alcaraz? This is the first time they were in a tournament together since Wimbledon.
I think it's the first time they both played since Wimbledon.
Alcaraz played Toronto Masters last week and lost to an American, Tommy Paul. But yes, this was Djokovic's first tournament since Wimbledon. Basically took a month off, a little vacation with the family, you know, got back into it 2 weeks before the U.S. Open, and everybody was hoping we were going to get this matchup, and sure enough, we did. And Alcaraz wasn't playing well at all this week. Every match he played went to three sets. So, but then, you know, as you mentioned, Djokovic, I've never seen him probably in about 12 years just look so fatigued, so drained. I mean, he literally looked like he was getting heat stroke. It was 93 right. degrees with a feel of 99 yesterday. Humidity off the charts, and he got up a break lead in the first set, and then, yeah, it looked like he totally fell apart. And I was like, you know, you're saying, okay, this is the first time he's playing in the day this week. Does that have a factor? Is he just getting old? Like, is he getting more and more mortal now? Does Alcaraz own him? And sure enough, as I've seen Djokovic do countless times, maybe a little bit of mental warfare. I'm sure he was actually feeling it and probably felt like he was going to pass out. But then that first set ended. He went down a break in the second set, and then sure enough, got a break. Got back even, wins the second set in which he saved a championship point, and then that third set, it lasted an hour and 40 minutes. And yeah, the shot making, the physical exhaustion these two were experiencing, it was an all-out war. And I guess, you know, the main thing that comes out of it, it's not a Grand Slam, but we can only hope that in 3 weeks' time we get to see this rematch in the U.S. Open final.
So I covered this event, I mean, I don't even remember when. I have to go back and like cross-reference who won and whatever. But my job for this week or so in Mason, Ohio was to just go to press conferences, record sound, do interviews, and send it to through this company to, like, I don't know, 25 to 30 global clients. So I was sending things to English-speaking countries, Spanish, French, all over the globe. I got the entire French press corps mad at me that I got spoken to by the ATP, like, media rep. And he came over and said, I know you're doing nothing wrong, but I have to tell you about this. Because, again, I was feeding sounds to the world. I only speak English. I know, like, 1% of Spanish. I can kind of weasel my way through a Spanish, especially reading Spanish, not speaking Spanish with somebody. So I would just go into the press conferences, and normally in tennis, because everybody speaks multiple languages, there's every reporter is represented too. So, like, there'd be English questions, and there might be French questions, or Roger Federer spoke three languages. There'd be three different sets of questions for Federer in those press conferences. But I would go into a French player's press conference, and it would just be the player sitting in a chair and all of us sitting around him or her, and everyone would just have their tape records, their microphones out. So I would just sit there and record what everybody was saying. They'd be done, and I would go, thanks, and hit stop on my thing, make it an MP3, and send it out. And these guys thought I was stealing their material because it was their questions. But it's a press conference. It's open season. You ask a question, that answer becomes everybody's use.
Yeah.
So they were like, there were six French dudes who, like, thought I was this terrible, like, unprofessional, disingenuous audio thief for 3 or 4 days in Ohio until finally they complained about it. So then what I had to do with the compromise was and thankfully all the players speak English as well as their native tongue. So I would ask a question in English, he or she would answer it in French, and then I would leave the room. And they would have their French conversation with Richard Gasquet or Guillaume Monfils, and I had to go back to my desk and send the one answer I got that I asked in English, and they answered in French.
They punished you?
Kind of. They just didn't get it.
And you were in the States, too. It's not even like you were at the French Open doing this.
And the event guy was like, I know this is how it works, but they're pissed. So, like, what can be the—and they don't get it. They don't understand what's the compromise, and this was the compromise.
I know you're right, but we're still going to punish you and only let you have one question and kick you out of the room.
Well, no, I could have asked more, but I could only send out the answers to my question. And it just worked out that I would go in, I'd ask two or three, and then I'd leave, and then they could do whatever they wanted. Because they would just—I don't even know what they were talking about. I could have been sending out things that were talking about, like, how they laced their shoes, what they had for dinner last night. I didn't even know the questions nor the answers. They might have not have been tennis-related. And I was going, record, stop, send. So it was probably—in the end, it was probably better for me to do it that way, because then I knew I was getting tennis answers. But, like, six dudes wanted to fight me in the parking lot over this. They thought I was, like, stealing their work, like, plagiarizing them. Not me. But it's super fun. And, like, by the end of the week, this is why I love tennis events so much. Like, I would record these interviews with Federer and Nadal. And by, like, Thursday, they would know that I would talk to them in English and they would answer in a different... Can you do Spanish? And, like, Federer knows three. I forget now what they are. It's German and he can speak French, too.
Who's this?
Federer.
Yeah. German, French.
And English.
And English.
And he would just rapid fire the same answer in the three languages after my one English question. Tennis players are amazing. International players are amazing.
Yeah, you play all around the world. You're definitely going to pick up. Like, I spoke pretty good Spanish up until about 6-7 years ago. I mean, if you played, you know, how many tournaments in Spain, 4 or 5 throughout the year, you're going to pick up a lot more. And then...
Well, and Europe is also so small in comparison to, like, to the United States, and you're moving through all these different countries, not states, with different languages, and borders get iffy. You just, it's just part of your life.
It's such a life, man. You get to play in the most beautiful places in the world year-round, always great weather. Damn.
Yeah. Instead, we're here in a dark radio room with very little air circulation, and maybe no one's hearing us.
Oh.
Because of technical problems. As Bodger does an air check. Oh, we're good. Okay, we're on the air. Glad everybody's here. Here's an update. Here's Boyle.
All right. Let's start with the Little League Classic from last night. Williamsport, rubber game between the Nats and Phils. Washington jumped on Zach Wheeler for 4 runs in the first inning, and that was just enough. Phillies were shut out for 8 innings. They rallied for 3 runs in the top of the 9th. JT Realmuto pinch hit and came to the plate as the tying run. But Nats closer Kyle Finnegan struck him out to end it. Nationals win 4-3. Phillies lose their grip a bit on the top spot in the NL wild card. Elsewhere, my favorite game of this baseball season. How many losses are the A's on track for? The Orioles mollywopped them again, 12-1, to pull off a three-game sweep in Oakland. Baltimore maintains their second-best record in baseball, but the A's are now 34-90. They're on pace to finish. Quick guess, anybody?
34-90 means 124 games, right?
How many more wins are they going to get? How many more wins if they finish, maintain the pace that they're at currently right now?
So that means they've got 38 games left.
47.
They're going to lose 118.
Yep, you're right. They're on pace to go 44-118. That would be the eighth worst in the modern history of the game. It would be one win better, though, than the Tigers from, what was that, 2003, 20 years ago?
Okay.
Yeah. Meanwhile, White Sox pounded the Rockies 10-5. And in Arlington, Max Scherzer moved into 11th place on the all-time strikeout list in Major League history. Then he imploded. Couldn't get out of the fourth inning. Brewers took down the Rangers 6-2. NFL preseason week 2 wraps up tonight. Bogues, you were talking about it. Ravens and Commanders. We'll see if Baltimore can continue this absurd, historic preseason streak. We talk about it every year.
I love it.
And every year they don't lose. They have won 24 consecutive preseason games dating back to 2015. I mean, you want to talk about a bet that can't lose.
That might be the most inexplicable streak trend in sports.
At best nowadays, your starters play two games, two out of the three now, right, that there are. At best, your starters play two, and they come out either at halftime at best or after the first quarter.
Right. And think about the amount of doofuses they're playing in the back half of the third quarter and the fourth quarter that could ruin everything.
And it's not like the Ravens have decent depth, but it's not like they're rolling out a Pro Bowl team.
Right. Right. I don't get it. I don't, and I love it. I hope it never ends.
Do we have a line on this game? I mean, they have to be, because you can't, in theory, you can't in good conscience as a bookmaker, as a sports book, make them more than like a -130 favorite, can you?
You're asking the wrong guy about that.
Oh, I got it loading right here.
I'm just wondering how many dudes have.
Baltimore's actually favored by 1.5.
Okay, right, yeah, 1.5-point favorite. Yeah, yeah, -130 on the money line. I don't think you, in good conscience, you can make them
more
than that.
Knowing me, if I was going to place a buck on this one, Washington would win. So, I when it comes to gambling,
a compulsive gambler.
Yeah, see, if you are, please do not listen to what I said about a bet that can't lose, because they absolutely, it's a preseason football game. But we're getting closer and closer. Last night, Saints beat the Chargers 22-17. Famous Jameis Winston played the first half. He led three scoring drives, finished 13-for-21 for 169 yards. Meanwhile, one of the best backup QB names in the NFL, good old Easton Stick, played the entire game for the Chargers. He did throw two picks, but he also ran for 63 yards and two tutties. Tutties. That is right. Carlos with a K, no longer here to check that. And
everybody drink.
Yeah, let's. Brandon Staley, though, not impressed.
I think it was an uneven performance in the passing game for us. You know, we didn't protect the passer very well. I didn't think we threw it with accuracy. I just thought it was inconsistent throughout the night. And, you know, it was certainly three turnovers, you know, really told a story tonight.
Bogues, I know you want to talk about the scary incident that took place over the weekend, so I will save that for you, especially because we are late to break here. So that's all I got for you. Saturday, there was a ton of games. We will go through some of the best action over the weekend from week 2 in the NFL preseason, and I'll get you all the other big news that are going on in sports next hour.
One of those games was the Niners. Brock Purdy played in it, cementing their status to me as the best team in the NFC. That's next on the DA Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Felt really good just to be out there with the guys in a game environment. Obviously, just get the nerves out a little bit. Just the build up to a game and everything, and then being able to, you know, get an early completion to Debo and get things rolling. So it felt really good, you know, be able to get out there, drive, and honestly just be in a game, you know, environment, like I said. So, yeah, I'm excited about it.
That was Niners QB Brock Purdy after playing Saturday night in a game the Niners eventually won over the Broncos 21-20. It was Brock's first action since hurting his elbow in the NFC title game. 4 of 5, 65 yards. He ran for I think eight or nine yards at one stretch, took a sack, took a hit, put points on the board, and then he was done. I guess it couldn't have gone better because in particular, he took a hit and survived it. You need that when you're coming back from any kind of injury. And, you know, there's still, I think, a small bit of reason to hold back on Brock Purdy. We have seen other guys have nice short stints in the NFL and then not pan out long term. There's still logic in the idea that there was a reason why he was not a frontline college quarterback and why he was the last pick in the draft, but he appeared to be pretty damn special as last year ended, and he had won that job so confidently and so completely that the Niners never even considered making this an open competition or waiting to see how that elbow was. All along, they said, once he's healthy, he's our guy, with Trey Lance standing right there. All the draft capital they put in to get Trey Lance, the Niners are done with that. They have moved on. Brock is the guy, and if he goes right back into being the player he was at the end of last season, having them a step away from the Super Bowl, to me, that's the best team in the NFC. And I know how good the Eagles were last year. I know that they have made some additions this offseason, but they've also lost a handful of guys. Jalen Hurts, you'd have to assume, is only going to get better. But the Niners, to me, with Purdy, with McCaffrey for a full season, Debo might be my favorite offensive player in the entire NFL. And I know Kyle Shanahan's history in the biggest of games, but up until those big games, he's a genius. And he's got all of these weapons to work with on offense. The rest of the defense is ridiculous. That, to me, top to bottom, is the best team in the conference. I was just watching Hard Knocks and some crazy, weird, psycho mentalist guy and Mecole Hardman have it Jets-Niners in the Super Bowl. I don't know about the Jets' participation in that game, but I'm pretty confident in the Niners getting there through the NFC because they're, to me, just that good 1 through 53. And if Purdy's back to full health and remains what he was, gets better from the end of last year, you're going to have a tough time beating that team in San Francisco or in your building when we get to December and to January. Hour number two begins with more NFL preseason reaction. We ended a game early on Saturday because of injury. We played one last night despite a tropical storm and an earthquake. Next on the DA Show.